Today on the AV Podcast, we discuss the topic that everybody loves and you can't get enough of. The U.S. election. Oh, yes. Our favorite topic every 4 years. Please try to contain the excitement. Have a seat if you got to calm yourself down. I'm joined by DJ Keo and South Sharad family member Headley as we dive into, which I could safely say from now, is part one of the aftermath of the election. We share our thoughts on Joe Biden, run down our top three worst moments of the Donald Trump administration, how we might crash Twitter in the next 2 months. Plus, we get into the possibility of this election going to Supreme Court and being flipped, as well as Dave Chappelle's SNL monologue and more. South Sharad is available wherever you listen to your podcasts: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Tune in and Alexa is just some of the places you can catch all of these shows. And by listening, rating, reviewing, and subscribing to all of these shows that I put out, and clicking on all the 5 stars, just by you doing this, you give me life. It costs nothing, and it takes like 3.7 seconds to do it. So please, please, please get started. And to dive into my catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthSharav.com. Once again, that's SouthSharav.com to go through all of the past episodes. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Sharav Radio. Look, everyone has opinions on this subject, and by no means am I a political junkie, and by no means am I an expert. I just play one on TV. Hit it!
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Sharav Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. I'm just going to dive right into this question real quick before we get started. So if and when Joe Biden gets to the White House on January 20th, does he have to burn it out with sage?
Yeah.
Exorcist? I don't know.
Holy water, the whole nine, man. It might be bubbling.
like, does it have to be like one of those deep cleanses where he has to come in on the 21st and not the 20th? He has to stay at the W Hotel or something?
Yeah. You have to dehumify the whole place, man. Straight up.
Yo, so, what are your guys' thoughts on the election so far? I can't even say officially, but so far, so before we answer the questions for everybody, listen, this is gonna be like part one of this election pod, because we'll do a part two when it's actually official. But so far, I guess we'll start with you, Headley. What are your thoughts on the election process?
I mean, man, like, where do you start? We talked about this officially, unofficially, in the sense that we knew that Trump was going to go down like Scarface. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He was not going to surrender this. From months ago, when he was trying to sabotage the USPS postal, mm-hmm, and talking about mail-in fraud, we knew this was going to be his MO when he went into it. That's one script he did not divert from. Like, we knew that he was going to do that. But it was nuts, man. It was like watching a football game and you being up by like 3 touchdowns going into the fourth and just seeing the team basically disintegrate in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the Clippers in the bubble.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? We knew that the mail-in votes was going to be strong for the Democrats. But how it swayed so much between people coming in on election day and the mail-in votes, I didn't see that. I didn't see it going to be that big of a swing. And it was still frightening to me that it was still that close. I mean, Trump got 71 million votes, which is the most. I mean, this is the biggest turnaround election ever, over in a century. But for him to still get that many votes, it's scary, right? With everything that he stood for. But in a nutshell, I mean, I can go on for days, or I can just stop right now.
You can keep going if you want. It's fine. Empty your soul, Headley. Empty your soul. It's a safe place. It's a safe space.
I mean, it's a better world that now that Trump is out of the office, hopefully. You know, knock on wood. I know he has all his legal team and Cameron, you know, trying to fight this. But I think it's going to be a losing battle. For not. But then again, it just shows another example of the Trump administration where if things don't go exactly to how he wants it, he'll beg, cheat, fight his way to a victory. So part of me is still a little apprehensive, but you know, the majority of me feels like, okay, this is it. I think it's the first time, I can't remember the first time in how many years that that a president hasn't been reelected. It was like 50 years or something like that?
Been reelected? No, it's 28 years, because the last time,
oh,
I believe
years?
It was...
Okay, maybe not as long as I thought.
Yeah, I think the last time was Bush Sr.
Yeah.
Because I think he only ran one term after he was vice president of Reagan, and then Clinton beat him with a saxophone.
Yeah, but they split the vote that year.
Yeah.
Because of Ross Perot.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Okay. All right, so what are your thoughts, Keo?
I mean, we talked about this yesterday off record, but like I feel Democrats have work to do. They have a lot of work to do. Because, you know, if you think about it from their perspective, you're this guy who, you know, everyone says he bumbled COVID. They have issues with foreign policy. They have issues about how he's running the country, or whatever. And this election wasn't runaway. In fact, the Democrats lost seats in the House. They lost state houses for state senates, state legislators, they lost governorships, they lost in every aspect of this election. The only thing that they won, they can hang their hat on, is Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And you think about how crazy is that? That all the stuff that's happened in the last 4 years, Democrats could only hang their hat on Joe Biden of all people. So when I say they got work to do, that is an understatement for what happened here. Democrats lost 9 and about to be 10 seats in the House. So at this moment in time, Nancy Pelosi doesn't have enough votes to be reelected as Speaker of the House. She's begging for votes right now from people who hate her, and they think that she's responsible for them losing all these seats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a civil war going on in Democrats right now. There's even people that lost their seats that live with her because they think she's responsible because she has some say and the recovery and the bailouts and the stuff. The House controls the purse,
mm-hmm.
and the Senate controls the laws. And the House held on to their money, and they thought they could sit this out for as long as they could and make people's lives as miserable as they could. And they were just close to this election because everybody hates Trump. But, you know, they got to everybody hates Trump part, but they didn't realize everybody hates them too. Like, when you look at the polls, the House polls are lower than Trump's approval rating. They're in the 20s. Trump's thing is in the 40s. Yeah. And I don't think people really appreciated how horribly Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer's leadership has been in the House and the Senate this entire time. Because their tactic was, we're just going to out-Trump. Which is, to me, the logic states that if this guy is a blowhard TV person, yada, 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 let him do that. You don't have to go fall to his level and try and fight him in the mud. And they were in the mud this entire 4 years. Both of these guys tried to do the silliest tactics to show off or whatever for this election, and it backfired. It blew up in their face. There's a very real possibility, if any of these recounts go through, that the Democrats could statistically lose the House right now. That's how close this is.
Yeah.
So it's like
they sacrificed them. They sacrificed themselves essentially for the presidency. But
yeah, right now the Democrats have solidified 216 seats in the House. They lost 5, and the Republicans picked up 9 because a lot of these seats aren't really full yet.
Right.
They have to get to 218. If there's a recount in some of these states that they picked up the House in, they could lose those seats. And Nancy could not be Speaker of the House. So we could have, this is how crazy American politics is. You could have Republican state houses, Republican governors, Republican Senate, and Republican House, and Joe Biden as president. Hey, you want to talk about a crapshoot of a shit show? Imagine what that's going to be. It hasn't happened before, but because they've had mail-in ballots and this other stuff, that they've been doing things that they don't normally do. Because there's a lot of mail-in ballots that Joe Biden was the only name on the ballot. They didn't go down ballot. They didn't pick other people. Mm-hmm. People just wanted to get rid of Trump. They just picked Joe Biden, folded up their thing, and mailed it in. And so there's a lot of places where Democrats, they're short for votes. Statistically, I know it's highly improbable. Most likely what's going to happen is Democrats can keep the House, since the Republicans can keep the Senate. And that's going to be gridlock for 4 years. But the probability of that is high, that there's a good chance that we're just going to have, no matter what happens, like Alien versus Predator, there's no winner here. No matter what happens, it's going to be a mess. And this is why what I was telling you yesterday, the Democrats have to do a soul searching to figure out what their base is, what kind of party they want to be, or how their leadership is. Are you going to be in the muck for 4 years doing payback, being Donald Trump? Or are you going to actually govern and try to help people? Or, you know, like, there's states that sat on their hands during this election because they wanted to make everybody as miserable as possible. And look at California. California shut down Disneyland and Disney World, even though they didn't have a lot of high cases in California. Mm-hmm. Just out of spite, just to hurt the economy, so they helped them with the election. Same thing with New York City. They did it out of spite. After New York got that rush in the early part of this year from COVID, New York was fine for the rest of the time. They just had like normalized death rate, whatever. It wasn't right. Crazy.
Right.
And they still left everything locked down until today. And then Cuomo gets on TV and says, well, now that Biden's president, we're going to change our philosophy for how we're going to run the state. This makes me so mad. Because you can tell it was pure politics. Everything these guys did this entire election, mm-hmm. It was all politics.
Yeah, nothing.
I can rant like this for an hour, man. But go ahead. Go to the next thing.
No, Hedley, I know you wanted to jump in and say something.
Well, I mean, when it comes to the Biden-Harris tandem of president and vice and VP, I don't know about you, and I know that's when I speak to a lot of people. We're not sold on them.
No,
it was not just at all. The fact,
huh?
No, I said not at all.
Exactly.
Well, we've had that discussion. I'm like, I'm not a fan of them either.
Me neither. Yeah. And I understand with you know, people is very prideful of the fact that we have an Indian black VP, but some of her policies and some of her record in California. It wasn't stellar, man.
No.
Like, she...
You're using nice
some,
words.
She did some bad shit. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know we might get into it more later on. And Biden has done some stuff that... I said some things that were really questionable during his time as senator as well, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a question where everybody, as you said... She was right. Everybody hates Trump. But the fact that we've made Trump the now is the new standard, that standard is low, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced of the strong suit. I was talking to my brother, and it's like, you know what? It's like pick your poison.
Yeah.
And it's like take the lesser of two evils. And, Q, you educated me. I didn't realize how lopsided with the House and the Senate could be. With it being all of Republican, I know there's some huge elections that's that are coming up statewide in the next
couple months.
Georgia and other places, right? But that would be a clusterfuck if it happens like that. I mean, I don't know what the probability is. It sounds like it's higher than it's ever been in past. But that just goes to show, if that is the case, all these things that we talk about want to pass in laws and pass in bills might still end up being just like the Obama administration when he couldn't get stuff passed because he had to play nice on the other side, mm-hmm. but they didn't want to play nice neither. It's going to be that same thing because you need a majority rule. Everybody knows that the presidency is more of a figurehead and, you know, necessarily control everything. So it's going to be interesting. One thing I do like is that all those closet racists that we've seen for the last 4 years, where when they had Trump as their quote-unquote leader, felt really empowered to go out and say and do the shit that they've been doing. I saw this thing where it's like, okay, now we can go back to regular racism. not that it's going to be, you know, it's not like it's going to be all about rainbows and pot of gold and leprechauns now. We know that's not the case.
Right.
But it just shows you how much of a cesspool it was with Trump when you're like, anything's better than what we've incurred for the last 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. I saw it was a woman who was commenting. It was just somebody like on the street where they're just doing like street interviews, and she was saying that she had heard a CNN commentator saying that, you know, we're in a better place now, whatever the case may be, and she was saying like, yo, when Trayvon Martin got killed, that was during the Obama administration.
Exactly.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yep. You know, it's not like they weren't killing people before Trump and getting away with it. So
exactly, and you can go way further than that.
Exactly,
pretty great. You can go all of them.
That's what we have to realize at the end of the day. Like, yeah, Trump is out, but this is working finish, and especially like, you know what, when we talk about like oil prices, and like if say the oil prices they drop, I mean, or they go up, mm-hmm. and then everybody's upset, but then it drops a bit. We're happy, but then it goes up again, and we're upset. And then the whole time, it's gradually increasing, but we don't get so upset because we get dips of we get dips in the gas prices during those times, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's the same thing right now. Like Trump was just a spike in the oil prices where everybody's upset. There's going to be a little bit of a dip now, but historically, it's getting worse than getting better, right? Yeah.
No, it's a good analogy because that reminds me of Toronto maybe about 11, 12 years ago when gas was like $1.45. Remember when it was like super, super high? I remember buying a car. I bought my first truck, and it was based on the fact that the gas was so high that it was actually cheaper to get the SUV than it was to get this Cadillac that I wanted. so that was like the decision I made was strictly based on gas. I'm like, which one is cheaper to like take the truck? I'm like, all right, hand me the keys. Like that, it was.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then when gas went down, you're like, people are celebrating, but you're like, yeah, it's still more expensive than it was before.
Yeah, exactly.
just elaborate on your analogy, but yeah, but it's so true. Like, I think one thing you touched on too, Eddie, earlier was the fact that I think this is like the main thing that like I took from this election, this past week, that with everything that's happened in the last 4 years, like some of the most outrageous behavior, the coldness from the president, the attitude, the Twitter meltdowns, like firing so much people in his cabinet, all the racial tension, the riots, like he's still he had more votes than Obama.
Like, ridiculous.
You know what I mean? So to me, that tells you everything you need to know about America and just how they vote. And I mean, some of it is due to, you know, people's racial beliefs. And I think the last 4 years we've been taken behind the curtain. We're kind of seeing what's going on behind the curtain in terms of people's true feelings.
I think the issue here is that when Obama got elected, everybody's like, oh, America, they turned the corner. They're a liberal country. Nope. Trump reminded everybody America is a Christian conservative country.
Exactly.
And it's going to be like that for a while. Because based on this vote count that he got, 70-something million votes, that's a huge chunk of the country.
Yeah.
And that's not a minor thing. When people look at the Democrat votes, right, they're on the coast. The bulk of the Democrat votes are on the coast. The rest of the country is mostly red.
Yeah.
It's always been like that, you know what I mean? But at the same time, that's why a lot of people want to get rid of the electoral voting process, right? Because
I'm against that. I'm 100% against that. I think that's a terrible idea.
1,000%, but good luck to that happening, though.
I know.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. You got to change the Constitution to do that. But, like, for me personally, the Electoral College works because of migration. Everybody forgets that there was a point in time where California was a hick town with nothing in it, and people moved down there to make money in Hollywood and a bunch of other stuff, for farming, whatever. But something can happen in California, and they move to Nebraska, or they move to another country, and then California's worthless, and the popular vote's worthless. The Electoral College is the only thing keeping this country honest, to be honest. That's how I look at it. It seems that it does, no matter how much people live in New York or how many people live in California or whatever, the rest of the country has a say. And while the rest of the country is Christian racist, and it is what it is, if there's a move in migration, it's going to mess up that popular vote. Imagine if 9/11 happened in New York and a bunch of people died in New York. That popular vote is worthless now.
Yeah. Sorry, just to jump on what you're saying too. I think the other part of it is too, is like it kind of also reminds you too, just how people vote generally. Like, it doesn't matter who's in office. When people pick a party, they don't generally change sides, especially in the Midwestern states, right? Like, they're either very liberal or very conservative, and you know, and it's like, so it's like, that's kind of like the other reminder as well. So it doesn't matter really that Trump was in office. It's just, he was a Republican, and everybody else, that was a Democrat. That's it.
I want to make this point, because I know a lot of times, like, I don't think people who vote Republican are racist.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because, as you said, they vote for the party, not necessarily the person. My problem that I have is, if you're voting for Trump for office, you're basically saying that you don't care that he's a racist.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, I'll be damned, he might do things that will purposely suppress a large part of the demographics. They don't. Is it the fact that you don't care, or that doesn't seem to be a priority on your scale? And that's why, especially in this, and that's why I find in this election, more so than when Obama was running for office, you saw such a divide.
Yeah,
I've never seen a divide. You see in the news, and you see about civil wars, and you see about the hostility and the complete breakdown of countries and communities based on election. Even in Jamaica, when you have the different parties, the Green Party, and it's crazy.
That country's legendarily crazy with some of the. Huh? I said, election time in Jamaica is legendarily crazy at times.
Oh, it's nuts! It's nuts.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I've never, in at least in my time frame. I mean, I'm not going back decades and stuff, but at least in my time. When I'm at age to vote, if I was American, to see such a divide.
I think this is one of those elections where people are more connected than they've ever been before. So people can see YouTube. They can go read Trump's Twitter. Like that kind of stuff. If you weren't paying attention to politics, you would never know what the president's thinking before, up until this election.
Yeah,
you would have no clue what the people are saying.
I remember when he watched
the Wall Street Journal or whatever.
To the point of what Keo was saying about how everybody felt connected during this presidency, especially with Trump just going crazy on his Twitter throughout his whole term. And I was saying that it's funny he mentioned that, because I remember at the beginning, 4 years ago, when he won, everybody expected him to shut his personal Twitter, and then he'll just go with the POTUS one. Right, which has been the case throughout
Obama's
throughout social media and stuff like that. And usually with the POTUS one, I don't even, it's not him personally tweeting. You have like a staff and people behind you, so everything is censored, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he was like, forget that. And he's like, yo,
I'm on the toilet, man.
Yeah, he's like, yo, I'm gonna say what's on my mind.
he literally had it on the nightstand like the rest of us.
for real. He did.
I mean, like, that to me, that is a plus for the presidency, because this is the first time you're like, yo, this dude is crazy. He's just saying whatever's on his mind. He's just saying whatever he felt like. And that's not protocol. Everybody's supposed to give you the water down. We ran through the computers. A team of writers wrote this thing out for you. And here's your censored tweet that's going to say everything is
fine. He's like a quarterback that calls audible in every play.
Yeah.
You know? He's just driving the coach nuts.
This is the one reason why I say this election is not over, because of that.
Yo, and think about it. I think on his personal Twitter account, he's like at 100 million followers, something nuts. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well,
the amount of followers that he has.
Well, I'll ask the two of you, like seeing that he's got at least 2 months left in office. If things don't flip, he's got at least 2 months left in office. On a scale of like one to batshit crazy, where do you rank his next set of actions on Twitter? Like, should we be following him on Twitter?
I won't lie to you. I don't follow him, but I do check into it.
I check into it, but the thing with Twitter, though, is that social media, all of these companies, Facebook, everyone's censoring what he's saying. And so I don't think the Twitter is the thing you need to watch. What you need to watch is what's happening in the White House around people who work there. Because I have a feeling he can't pull off this recount or whatever, right? And he goes scorched earth. This guy is going to release stuff about aliens. He's going to release things about the CIA, what the CIA is doing in Nicaragua, whatever, in 18, whatever. Like, he's just going to go nuts and just throw out everything.
He's going to just start dumping
files. Well, think about it. He already fired his Mark Esner.
Who didn't he fire? Huh? I said, who didn't
no,
he
but,
fire?
But the thing is, no, but dude, he fired him after he lost the election. Like, you know your time has ended, and you still going out firing people?
Well, he was playing the fire a bunch of people the second he won.
But he lost.
I know that. The goal is basically there's a lot of stuff going on with the FBI and the CIA and Department of Justice and the NSA have been fighting him this entire election. Actually, not the whole election. For the 4 years that he's been in office, all of these departments have been undermining his presidency. So I think he's thinking, I got my deputies in there, I'll fire these guys, and I'll declassify whatever the hell I want, and I'll blow up this country for Joe Biden when he gets in. This guy is a petty billionaire. I don't know if you guys know stories about him when he was in New York, whatever. He used to call up radio stations and drop things with a fake name. He used to call himself John something or the other.
Yep.
And he used to release press releases for him to make him seem like he's a great person or whatever. And he used to call
even,
he
even,
was doing it. He was the one calling them.
Not only that, what he was doing to like Page Six and all those places, right? He would drop the nuggets and, you know, drop the info. And what he said is like, listen, the only thing I ask you to do in return is when you refer to me, you refer to me as Billionaire Trump.
yeah, he's doing all kinds of stuff like
that was his exchange. He didn't want no money. He said, "Yo, when you report about me, just make sure you put billionaire in front of my name."
Well,
even though this guy was broke, his marketing of himself was so huge that people thought he was swimming in it.
But
you want to talk about a Hail Mary curveball? How do you write yourself into being a billionaire just by talking it into existence?
You know what I mean? That's basically what he did.
You have a person like that who's on his last leg about to try and do a recount or whatever to get back into the White House. You're going to see some stuff you've never seen before. And the thing is, though, even if this guy, he can't win the recount or whatever to flip it, the Republicans have the state legislature. If Joe Biden can't get to 270 because of a recall or whatever, and he can't get the votes right, the Republican legislator is going to pick the president.
Yeah.
Are you telling me it's not automatically, it won't be automatically Trump?
It's funny.
Trump can will himself to being president again.
Just before I called you, Keo, I actually saw this video with Van Jones. Not the one where he was crying and bawling on Saturday. Not that one. The other one where he was doing a TED talk. So
yeah.
So that one, I think he just explained to the point where he's like, you know, if it goes to Supreme Court, if it goes to that legislative part of it, he's like, at the end of the day, he's like, it'll be like the votes never counted. And then it's just going to go down to like each state voting. And he's got more red states. He's got more states than Democrats. So they can just select. And if that happens, like, yo, it's going to be like, it might be civil war.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
he could legally make himself president by doing that. He could legally.
But my question would make him act as president. It was not like the Democratic Party can pick another person.
No.
What works is that, so let's say that Pennsylvania gets recalled and Joe Biden doesn't have 270. If they can't get the recount done before the end of December and they can't get a proper name out, the way the government works for the U.S. is that the states take two representatives to be electorals, and they get to choose who the president's going to be. And there's more Republican states than there are Democrat states, because the bulk of their vote comes from New York and California. So
I get that point.
28 to something. It's like 28 to 21 or something like that.
I get that point. But the question I guess I'm asking is who they pick to be the representative of their party would still be Trump. They can't change that.
They're going to pick Trump, and Democrats are going to pick Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's a change. Like,
but the thing that's crazy about this is that it is legal, and it's in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And so people can throw up their hands and be mad about it, but it's still legal.
It's a legal avenue.
You guys heard about obviously the glitches that they said they saw in the system in Michigan and Pennsylvania and these other states.
Yeah, what? I didn't hear what you said.
You've heard about the story about some of the glitches.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of stuff going on
in Pennsylvania,
and then there's a lot.
There's some human errors as well that have been showed up. It's scary. That's what I said at the beginning. Is like, yo, I'm confident, but you know, Trump has been one. He doesn't go without a fight. So
yeah,
we're gonna have to burn this guy alive. No, I'm serious. Like it's the only way, because he's not gonna concede.
So that's what I'm saying.
And the thing about it, he would scrape, he would lie, he would cheat his way to victory. So that's why it's fun to see in a meltdown how he's acting, but it's like.
It's a calculated meltdown, man. Avenues to win.
Well, I know. Just to touch on your analogy, at least. So you're saying he should set himself on fire like Lamplighter and the Boys?
Hey, I don't mind. Sometimes you got to play. You got to go in the mud with them.
But you know what it is though. I think like. What you guys are saying, and it is, I totally agree with all of it. It's on brand with how he's been, not even just for this past 4 years. Like,
exactly.
This is who he's been. Yeah, this is who he's been.
Yeah, that's his MO.
So, at this point, like, but especially the last 4 years, I'm pretty prepared for him to just do anything at this point on Twitter. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if I go on his Twitter and see him say the N word, you know, if he invites Putin and Kim Jong Un to like a White House dinner. You know, he's got more rallies before he leaves office, even after he leaves. Like, I'm literally prepared for everything.
Well, the thing though, it's not the stuff he's doing is planned. It's not chaotic, like he doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's got legal scholars and stuff like that advising him about how to do this thing here. So
as I said right from the beginning, when he was trying to sabotage the United States Postal Service, and this was months ago. You knew this was all in the plans. That you knew, okay, open door A. If shits go south, break glass in case of emergency. He had all this stuff planned out from beforehand, right? He's setting the foundation.
Biden had his team for how he's going to respond to this thing too. They were both of these guys. Even though media, everybody was telling you, oh, Biden's got a 15-point lead, all this crap, everything's in the bag. Both of those guys knew that this is going to be a dogfight to the very end. And Biden has a team of lawyers, and Trump had his team of lawyers. Yeah. They were getting these guys ready back from May or June. When Biden finally got the nomination, they were getting their team of lawyers to fight this in court. Well, now, the problem for Biden is that he has to go take this to the Supreme Court, and there's two people in the Supreme Court who have beef with them.
Yeah.
Brett Kavanaugh has beef with Kamala Harris, and Clarence Thomas has beef with Joe Biden.
For the Anita Hill stuff.
With the Anita Hill stuff.
Well, not to mention, didn't Trump, how many Supreme judges did Trump put in? He's put in the most Supreme judges.
He put three.
It's
the most in the one single term.
Exactly. It's the most in one single term. So it's like he has his lackeys in place.
The thing that angers me about that is that the Democrats did this to themselves. And this is what I keep talking about. They need to do a reckoning here. Chuck Schumer, when Obama was president, they're having trouble passing the judges to get them into court, whatever, for a Supreme Court, whatever. They couldn't get it through. So Chuck Schumer got rid of the supermajority that you needed to get it passed a judge through with the filibuster. He got rid of it. And these guys, in their forward-thinking brain cells, decided, we're never going to lose another election. This will never come back to bite us in the ass. And Mitch McConnell told this guy in the Senate floor, you will live to regret this. And then Trump wins. He pots in two. And then Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies. And she was supposed to get out when Obama was president. But Obama and Hillary Clinton got together and had a talk that it would be great if a woman got to nominate the person to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And that's why she was in the Supreme Court till this time. They did this to themselves.
But it's funny because we were talking offline yesterday. I feel like, you know, like back in 2008, like there was a plan in place when Bush was going to, you know, leave his after the second term. There was more things in place. They had a perfect person to kind of like the Democrats had a perfect person to basically ride into the White House with, right? Like everything was laid out perfect, you know? And I felt like after Obama left, it's like they were just still trying to cruise on the fumes of everything Obama did. Just like sliding Hillary in. Like there was no new face that came in that was like younger, you know, like 40-ish, 50-ish, and just new ideas, that kind of thing. It was just Hillary couldn't then run for office, but like you because of Clinton, you basically seen her already. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You seen her already.
They did it to themselves. Yeah. They did this to themselves.
And
just like how they nominated John Kerry, the way the Democrat Party works is, even the Republicans up until Trump came along, is that the senior person in the party gets to run for president. That's why Bob Dole ran. That's why George Bush Sr. ran. And every time there's somebody breaks the mold, like Reagan and Obama, because Obama wasn't supposed to run. Hillary was supposed to run. He took her spot.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why they won, because they broke the mold.
Yeah. And I guess they
have a person that they've elected that's supposed to be there, like John McCain. Like, why would John McCain run? Why would you think that's a viable candidate?
But I was going to say, to play devil's advocate, I guess that's kind of what the Republicans follow, because they got Trump. Trump blew the mold breaker. Yeah, he was a mold breaker.
Yeah, he blew it up, yeah. And that's why they got their just desserts from this. Just the same way Democrats, it worked out in their favor because Obama came in, but it could have been anybody. You could have had like a former David Duke guy run for president. He could have won because he broke the mold. Because it's supposed to be, look at Kamala Harris, right? She's the person that's been groomed to run for president. And they tried to wrap this around and people didn't like her. And then they snuck her in vice president. But she's breaking the mold because she is the mold. She's the one that they wanted in the first place. He had all the money from Goldman Sachs. He had all the money from Wall Street. And people on TV were like, yay, she's formidable. Just the person that you want in there. And they tried to push her through, and people rejected her. She dropped out before she got a single vote.
Yeah.
It's funny you mention that, because I honestly, how old is Biden, 76?
77, yeah. I think. Is he 77?
76.
Yeah, he's 78 next year.
Exactly.
79.
79-18.
I won't be surprised if we see Kamala being a acting president or president in lieu at some point of his term.
I told Kyle yesterday, she's going to throw him down a flight of stairs, man. She's going to be president.
I'm serious.
That's the person they really wanted. They didn't want Joe Biden. They stuck with him. They didn't really want him. Obama told him not to run.
But again, the familiarity, right? And like the Obama fumes. Like that Obama train was like, listen, I mean, he wasn't perfect, but the presence of him was so strong. Like they're still trying to run, off the remnants of that.
When Obama did a speech and brought him to the national scene.
Right.
Oh yeah, the DNC speech in 2004.
Yeah, exactly. That was like his declaration. Like people were talking about that. Like this was like the new DC comic movie that was coming out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like they watched it, they studied it. I know my mom was like, you know, this is like was their long lost son that was up there talking. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and I believe the same thing. Like everything was in place for Hillary, and then that just took a swing, and you know, she never got back. Because it is funny because when this is why I stopped listening to, I mean, it hasn't been that long, but that's why I don't even listen to polls anymore, because when Hillary was going up against Trump, every poll had Hillary. Not, it wasn't even supposed to be close.
Yeah.
And I still remember when Trump won, I was like, what the hell happened? How could they be this wrong? Because it wasn't even supposed to be close.
Not even when the results happened, at least. Because I remember talking to like people like you and a few people when it was happening, when like the election was actually happening midway through the process. You're like, what the hell is going on here?
Exactly. I was like, wait, is this really happening? We even joked that he was probably surprised. Like, yo, am I really going to be president? I just wanted a renewal on Apprentice.
I truly believe that. Like I always believe that, like, you know, I said this the last podcast where when he won, I think he was shocked. I don't think he was expecting to win. I think he just wanted to just raise his profile, do all these, you know, tours, come out with a Donald Trump network, you know what I mean? Do all these things, and who knows, maybe he'll still do that afterwards, but I think that was like the plan, you know, just, you know, because usually anybody who runs for office, and even if they lose, like there's still a lucrative career for them going forward, right? Mm-hmm. So I think he was going to capitalize on that, and then it's like, wait a minute, I won? So it's like, oh shit. Like, I still remember hearing like the first few days they said he was scared shitless in the White House, and then afterwards it's like he put on a bravado and that was it. So it's gonna be interesting because again, like he's always been this kind of personality, but now you're giving somebody with that kind of ego the most important job in the country at an age where it's the personality's so soaked in, like seasoned chicken. Like we really shouldn't be the least bit surprised at anything that we see. Even though what we saw already was been like almost pretty much reprehensible, I think it's gonna the next 2 months is gonna be a movie.
My only concern here is that because Trump he's acted out or whatever, is that people are gonna be so thankful that Joe Biden's president, they're not gonna be paying attention to what he's doing, and that is gonna be a huge problem. Because I told you before we started this thing, this guy reached out to Dick Cheney for foreign policy stuff. I don't want to hear that. That's the stuff I don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Like that concerns me, because, you know, these guys are, when Obama was president, he was lighting up the Middle East. He ran out of bombs in Syria. And they overthrew Libya. They tried, you know what I'm saying? Like they had troops on the ground in Somalia. Like when everybody's so hung up about, yay, Biden's president, he's going to save us, everything's going to be the same again, you're not paying attention to what this guy's going to be doing on the ground. And that is my biggest concern. Honestly, like going forward, I am horrified about that. And a lot of people that are progressives, or, you know, people that they support liberal policies, they're like, we messed up. There's a lot of people on Twitter right now that's like, oh my God, what have we done? Just because of how he's reaching out to these neocons and all these people that, like, he's trying to get all these Republicans in the cabinet. That's not a good sign.
No.
you're going to replace Donald Trump and throw a new person who's Republican light with a bunch of neocons that got everybody into wars for the last 12, 15 years. You're going to add them to your cabinet? That's not a good sign. That's a terrible sign. And he's not waiting until he gets sworn in. He's doing it now, in November, like a week after this election.
Where it's not official yet.
Yeah, it's not even official yet. This guy's doing this now. He's telling everybody what he's going to do. I'm concerned, right? I know people are dancing in the streets like, yay, Joe Biden, Trump's gone. But I'm like, I don't know.
And you know what? Because at the outset, I'm saying that I want to do, you know, bring you guys on for like part two when it's actually official. I'm gonna bite my tongue and I'm gonna save my comments for all the people dancing in the streets that we're watching on Saturday. That like, I'm gonna bite my tongue. I'm just not gonna say anything about that right now. I'm gonna hold that thought. I'm gonna hold that thought right now. But the question I want to ask you guys just before, kind of before we wrap up is. And I know it's kind of like a hard question to ask, but like on the top of your head, what are like, and I guess I'll start with you, Henley, what is like the top three most insane or most appalling things that to you that Trump has done, that anytime you think about the Trump presidency era, you're going to think about these two or three things. And it's a list. You can just pick and choose really and truly. It's almost like, this is almost like picking like, what's your best song from Purple Rain? what's your top songs from Illmatic? Like this is kind of what's like what's the equivalent to that, but in reverse.
Yeah, I mean it's really hard to really pinpoint. I mean shoot, there's so much he's done. Like the complete meltdown or the complete lack of urgency with the whole COVID and the way he addressed it, that, I mean, it completely shut down the economy. They said like, what, 20% of the deaths in the world is in the United States of America right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't look at his presidency without looking at COVID. And a lot of people believe that if it wasn't for COVID, where you have people, you know, trying to social distance and elected to do mail-in ballots, that was probably his undoing. Because, you know, the economy was great and all this stuff as he keeps on talking about, and then his lack of preparedness with COVID destroyed that and happened during an election year, right?
Because both sides was affected by that. Everybody was affected by that, essentially, right?
So obviously COVID, everything with ICE, with borders, the separation of families, that they have with the separation of family when it's of that, you know, when it's children, some of them under 2 years old.
Post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, exactly.
Disorder, yeah.
But the mere fact that separated families, and sometimes families for months at a time, you know, and basically making this not only did he do this, but he did this purposely to diminish people coming and illegally crossing into the border. Even though you can illegally cross, and then there is a system in play, but he made sure that if they did that, they would separate their families to discourage people to do that. Right? Yeah. That's hideous, right? And then obviously you can't think about everything that's happened with the shootings, with African Americans, and then with mass shooting in schools, and, you know, gun laws, and how they're never touched, and about how, you know, with his comments and the whole thing about, you know, stand by.
Mm-hmm.
The whole racial aspect of his tenure. And whereas you said, like, it basically gave all those closet racists a leader for them to, you know, feel like they can sit out their wild oats. I would have to say those three things are probably the worst of the hundreds. But, yeah, in a nutshell, if I had to pick three, those are probably the big
off the top of your head.
Yeah.
What about you, Keo?
I think a big thing, because it affects us, because we're here in Canada, was the trade war with Canada. And you know, Trudeau, he deserves a little bit of blame for this, because I don't know what he's thinking, but there's a huge issue with milk production, and Canadians are shipping stuff down to America, and he basically started a war, a trade war with Canada and Mexico. I don't know what his strategy was, but you know, like these things affect us. It hurt us with car production in Ontario. That directly affects us. We live in Ontario. The trade thing affects us. Mm-hmm. I think the foreign policy stuff, it's disjointed, and it wasn't. I think realistically, he kind of tried to bully other countries into doing the American way. Yeah. And I don't think that's probably the best strategy for going forward. But you know, like I don't agree laying down either, which is what America was doing before. But like you get basically America swung to one extreme. Either you're gonna let everything slide, or we're just gonna slam the door on everybody and do it America's way. Like you gotta do the America way. Like that's how he was mm-hmm. with that stuff. And like I have issues with you know, COVID response and stuff at the border, but like a lot of that stuff was just in place. Like it was like Kelly said before, being present's like a placeholder. And so I can't fault him for like the border thing. You know, Obama had built the cages and he had the kids coming separating them because of the lawsuit. A judge picked that thing up, and rather than deal with it, Trump doubled down on it. And like he made it more personal, I guess that's the way you could see it. But the process has been going on for how many years now? Yeah. And so like my thing, like my issues with Trump is more of a macro level on how he governs. And I think that he thought he could govern like a president, a CEO of a company, rather than a president of a country where you got to compromise and you gotta work together with some people on a smaller scale. Because if you look at everything Trump did, everything he's done is macro, like everything's large. So, you know, like his trade policy is large. They're a huge thing with North America, Mexico, Canada. Those are huge things. Him trying to do trade deal with Japan to stick it to China. Those are huge things. On a small day-to-day level, I don't think that he did as good a job as he could have, and that it brought a lot of issues to the country. And to me, that his governance style, like you need like the basic little manager, that not even a little manager, but like a person who handles the small tasks in addition to the big tasks. And this guy zoned out on all the small tasks. Like COVID is a perfect example of a small task. Like how do you miss all of this stuff here? And there's so many other ways. Like, granted, you have the state stuff. And America is the coalition of states, and they run their own thing. And the federal government doesn't have much control over what the states do. But, you know, resources, you know, just being able to talk to people without insulting them. These are things he couldn't do.
Yeah.
Like, he's calling the governor of Michigan. He called her a hapless wit person. Because her name's Whitmore. And he called Cuomo, he's calling him a clown, and he's making fun of Newsom. Like, you need to work together with these people, regardless
of what you do with them. I just have to make the point with Michigan. Her, mm-hmm. her life was in jeopardy. Like, there was threats against her life. There was plots for assassination, and he didn't give two fucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, in public, like, everybody gets that, too, but I think that thing came out personally for her, and rather than it's just a standard threat that everybody else gets. Because when Obama was president, he had, like, a threat level jumped up, like 700% more death threats than normal as a president. Like, that's crazy.
That's insane.
Like, that's absolutely crazy.
Well, I mean, he's black. I mean,
that was 100% the only factor. Why? I mean, that goes without saying. But like, yeah, like that. If I had issues with him on a thing, I'm like, yo, if you're president,
be president of the minor stuff too. And he didn't look like he was interested in
that. Skipped over all of that. Yeah, I mean, this is like, yeah, to select your greatest hits, like I said, like if this was like Illmatic or Songs of the Keys of Life, it's, this is really hard to choose. Off the top of my head, I would borrow your point, Headley, and say, the border stuff, like that one was that one actually put a knot in my stomach the first time I heard about it, because that was like shortly, was that within the 100 days, like his first 100 days? I think so. I think that might have been within his first 100 days when that was being enacted, and when people couldn't, they weren't able to come back to the States, like if they flew to Israel for the weekend, for like a week or something, and there are a lot of people are stuck in their countries because they couldn't, like all that stuff that was happening, that put a knot in my stomach when that was initially going on, because I was thinking, especially when they're separating children. Like that hit my heart, because I'm like, you know, some of us were parents, but on top of it, it's like I look at that and I said, yo, you know, not all of these families are getting brought back together, because they were shipping people. So it's like, for example, like you try to cross the border, they were taking your kids, shipping them to San Diego. They're taking you and shipping one parent to Chicago, one parent to Maine, and none of them speak English. Like how's that gonna unite that back together? Yeah,
under 2 years old. That's gonna have an everlasting effect, and you're separated for a month.
But Headley, and then you saw some of the videos when they brought the families back together, and the kids wanted nothing to do with the parents.
Yeah,
and it was like I was like, yo, I can't even watch this. Like this is terrible, you know. And I mean, who's to know if this was happening before? But, you know, because, again, the social media and all this stuff that's happening now, we're getting to see all this stuff.
Yeah, it amplified. So, yeah. It was definitely happening before.
It was happening, exactly.
It was happening before.
But like, it's like he turned the noose on that.
Yeah. And I think part of it, too, was like he ran the country like, I know you, Keo, you're saying like a CEO. I always felt like he was running it like the head of a TV network. Because the way that he tried to, you know, between his Twitter, the comments and different things, it was almost like he was saying stuff for ratings. But like, you would do that if you're running a network. But he wasn't running a network; he was running a country. You know, so
I'm blaming the media for that. They were breathlessly following everything. Like, you don't need to say everything this guy says. Just stop talking about it, and it'll go away. They hyped everything he set up.
But yeah, I see your point, but at the same time, as we talked about with him having his own Twitter, and as Calvin said, probably right beside the nightstand, it was impossible to ignore this guy.
Yeah, but they're not talking about what he's saying now. He's still tweeting right now, and they're not talking about it. They just stopped talking about him right now. Yeah. Think about that. If the news had done what they're doing now, like he wouldn't be ranting and raving like he was on Twitter. If they would just say, hey, you know, we're going to be responsible today and not turn this into the Jerry Springer show to follow everything that Trump said today. Because that's what they were doing. Every news channel had a person dedicated to follow what he said on Twitter and a person following around the White House to find out if he said or did something crazy so they can go write about it like a blog. Every news channel, every newspaper, it is ridiculous. Anything as though they didn't do that for any other president. Their goal, they realized there's a Trump bump every time we mention this guy's name, because people hate him, and we'll get some extra ratings. Did you see what Les Moonves said, the president of CBS?
No, what did he say?
He said in 2016, Donald Trump is probably bad for America, but it's good for CBS. Our ratings are up. And so as long as it's good for CBS, it's good for you guys, too.
Yeah, well,
the president of CBS said that. They only looked at dollars. Look, they looked at dollars and cents. And let's be real here. Newspaper is a dying business. They benefited greatly from writing about the Donald Trump did this thing bad today. They benefited greatly from that.
Yeah.
I think newspapers survived. Like, if you look at all of the tech companies like Vice and like just, what's the other, the Kotaku, like just blogs that are on the internet that are newspapers. They're supposed to be the future of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
For the last year, these guys have been firing 20 and 30,000 people a pop every other day. All of these newspapers, all of the blog sites, all of the news channels, ESPN ESPN just fired a ton of people. They're dying off of a thread, and Donald Trump brought, like, what did ESPN do? They turned into the Donald Trump political channel. This is a sports channel talking about politics and during a football game. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And look, Donald Trump, he could lose this thing. And what's going to happen to ESPN? They started firing people. What did they do? It's like 30,000 people got fired from ESPN already?
Yeah, it was a massive layoff.
It was a massive layoff. They're holding on for dear life, waiting for this election to be over, and then they're going to figure out what they're going to do now.
And that is the thing, too. Like, that's where he kind of changed society, because it was good business. It was good business to talk about Trump. It really was.
And CNN averaged like 200,000 viewers a night. They're up in the sixes and sevens because of Trump.
Yeah.
CNN's the lowest rated news channel on TV.
It was like one of the highest.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they got to watch what they... I mean, I think if Trump loses, I think they all have to kind of like look in the mirror to see what they're going to talk about next. Unless you know, which I mean, I highly doubt that's going to happen, unless Biden picks up his playbook and starts using it, like that's... You're going to have to look in the mirror to figure out what you're going to do.
That could happen. Biden's the type of person that could absolutely happen. That guy's a wild card. But like, I think a lot of these guys are praying secretly. They're punching their Trump voodoo doll at night, but they're praying secretly that he survives. They get four more years to stay afloat.
I think the other thing that brings, one of the things that like comes to my mind when I think about like one of the worst things with Trump, where I think it was day one, actually, was the whole inauguration crowd thing with Sean Spicer. Like the way that guy came in day one and was like arguing with the press about how the size of the crowd is, and like that right there was just like, man, what the hell is about to happen these next few years? Like, it was just like, whoa, this is really weird now. You know what I mean? Like, and it just started. Like, it wasn't even 24 hours, and this was like major controversy because he was arguing about the size of the crowd, and you're like, why is the press secretary talking about this in such anger?
Yeah.
Like, the guy was slamming the podium. They're making SNL skits about it. Like, it's
like, why is that even news? They should have been like, oh, this guy is crazy. We saw the pictures. What are you worried about this thing for? And then move on.
Yeah.
They carried that for a month. It was a whole month they were talking about this thing, the crowd size.
Yeah, so
whole month they did that.
So that alone was like, wow, this is gonna be weird. But I agree with
how long did he last?
4 years.
Hilarious, man.
Four years, man. It's crazy. Like I said, the show ain't over yet, man. We
show is not over. I promise you this: the show is not over.
Nope.
I would bet money on it. The show is not over.
And this is why, if you guys are cool with this, this is why I wanted to do a part two when everything is actually official and certified, because, you know, because one of the topics I definitely want to get into, and we don't have time to do it now, but it's essentially. Where does the black economy fit into all of this? And that's something I definitely want to dive into, but I want to hold that thought for when this is certified, which is probably going to be, who knows, in a couple of weeks. I don't know if you guys want to run the odds, but it could be a couple of weeks.
I think December.
It's going to be longer than that.
You think it's by the holidays? I'm thinking it might be closer to the holidays. But
I say it's going to be resolved by December, but not before. No way this is dissolved before.
Yeah, so...
And
so
Joe Biden better pray this doesn't go to Supreme Court. He better get on his knees right now and pray this does not go... He has the cards stacked against him in the Supreme Court. Three of the judges that the Supreme Court worked on George Bush's thing to get him elected in 2000. Three of them.
This is why I think it was important for Biden to win in a landslide. You know, like,
he did not get a landslide.
But I'm like, if he doesn't get a landslide, I'm like, this is going to get. And I think I can't remember the chat group this was in, but I swear, I remember reading this thing or this article about how Trump could legally kind of stay in office, where he can like enact certain laws, as you know, like, which is pretty much has never been enacted by any president. But he can enact this laws where he can kind of at least prolong this as long as possible. And the moment I read that, this was like in June or whenever it was I read this. But the moment I read that, I was like, he's doing this. Without a shadow of a doubt, we're like, oh, this he's doing this. No question about it. You know,
I think it was a Michael Moore article.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who was the author of that, but I remember reading that.
It was Michael Moore.
But I just remember reading halfway through it, I was like, oh yeah, he's doing this 1,000%. You know,
the problem is that because there's vote irregularities that's going on right now in all these swing states, it's feeding to the fire of, well, maybe I should stay.
Yeah.
And this stuff that's happening with these votes, the like vote flipping and them counting ballots that got no signatures on them and the stuff not filled out correctly, this is not helpful. I think possibly people thought they were helping or whatever, or they were like, we got to just get rid of Trump no matter what. And they took it upon themselves to do some stuff. But that's not helpful. Joe Biden has to win this election fair and square, so everybody's like, Trump's leave. But if this thing goes the other way, and they find enough fraud that they can take it to the Supreme Court, it's a wrap. You can call it right now. It's a wrap. And there's nothing they can do about it.
Problem is, they haven't even proven or came out with any type of proof of fraud as of yet. It's all speculation.
No, they have stuff. Stuff's happened. The thing about it is it's small. It's not enough to be like, well, it's going to overturn stuff. But the fact that it's happened, that you have physical stuff that you can point to that's like, oh, that's bad.
There's always some kind of tradition. There's always going to be some kind of miscellaneous. Is it enough to evoke where there's an overhaul, where there's a miscalculation? Because now you are questioning the whole democracy of how everything is done with election. And that in itself is...
Al Gore did it, though, in 2000. Al Gore did it, too. These guys, like, and this is why I'm like, I'm not pro-Democrat or pro-Republican, because they're all hypocrites. Everything that these guys, the Democrats, are saying right now about except the election, all of them were in office when Al Gore ran for president, and all of them were screaming the opposite when it was affecting their guy. Every last one of them. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, they were all there. Hillary Clinton, they were all saying it. So, like,
it's kind of like,
it's karma. That's what I think it is.
It's kind of like with how Trump is doing this now, where he's like, yo, when he's ahead, he's like, stop counting the votes. And yeah. When he's behind, he's like, keep on counting the votes.
Stop the votes. You know what I mean? It's stop like, the votes.
Al Gore did the same
thing. That's what I'm saying, exactly. It's like, you're basically doing what's best for you when you're in that seat.
Yeah. This is what makes this whole entire thing complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of people don't have a leg to stand on about what Trump should or couldn't do because of their past record. Joe Biden has a record of saying, like, you need to count all the votes, and also a record saying that, no, stop the count, and we need to let this go to the courts to decide this. You've got a record for all of that. It's one of those things where when you've been in office long enough, you can be on two sides of the coin at any given moment. And Joe Biden, he's the poster child of that. He was for and against all of these things right now that he's dealing with.
Yeah. So, like I said, this is where it's going to be interesting. And I know we're wrapping up right now, but I know both of you guys saw Dave Chappelle's monologue on SNL. The one thing I have to say about that, and I don't want to get into any long discussion about it really at this point, but the one thing I wanted to say about that was, what I find amazing about Chappelle and that monologue, it shows you the fearlessness, but more importantly, it shows you the freedom of mm-hmm. that he's able to say whatever he wants to say as a creative and as a black creative, which I think is actually borderline awe-inspiring, to be honest with you. Like, and I'm not saying like the monologue was like incredible. You know what I mean? Like, it was good. It was good. It was fine. But just the stuff that he was talking about saying, you're like, wow, man, like this guy is so, you know, and I know why they put him in that spot to host, because exactly 4 years before he did that when Trump got elected, mm-hmm. he was a host. So they wanted to kind of, he had a lot of profound things to say that first time when Trump was elected. You know, so this time it's like, you know, they kind of wanted to match that back, which I totally get, you know, and I know the next time we talk about this, it'll be too late to talk about it. But it was just crazy to see that kind of like the kind of freedom he has on a network, not like Netflix or HBO, But I mean, he's dropping the N-word. He's smoking cigarettes. He's getting this to some heavy topics, you know, on one of the three most powerful networks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I think. Sorry, go ahead, Eddie.
No. One thing I just want to add to what you're saying is what I find is crazy because, I'm including this when I say this, was when he walked away from the Comedy Central deal with the Dave Chappelle show, when all points and purposes, he was on top of the world. He was at the apex and matrix of his career,
mm-hmm.
and he let go. I think at the time was either $25 or $50 million contract because he didn't like the direction of the show, and basically he felt not that he felt that he was censored, but he didn't like how his voice basically was being portrayed or projected.
Right.
And when he left, and believe me, I was hurting because during that time, you know, the Chappelle show was everything.
Oh,
you know
God.
What I mean?
Yeah.
When it came to comedy. So for him mm-hmm. to leave and to leave all that money on the table, and then, you know, you hear how he went to Africa, like he was completely out of the scene. I didn't think he was going to come back. And if he came back, I didn't think he was going to come back stronger. And mm-hmm. to see where he is now, leaps and bounds where he was before. And as you said to Calvin, like it's almost crazy that the reason why he left all that money is because, you know, he felt his voice couldn't be projected the way that he wanted to. And for him to come back and to have that in tenfold. And to do that with no expense to his money, because his money is more streaked now than it was before.
Yep,
it's incredible, man. It got to be one of the best comebacks. And it's not your traditional comeback where you know he's defeated, but just in terms of you know from what he walked away from, and to come back with the acceptance that he has, even and be more defined than he was ever was before.
Yeah,
It's crazy, man.
Like he's the comic for essentially for our generation. Like that's what he's.
Yeah.
I think he kind of solidified that with the Chappelle show. But then, as you said, now that he's come back, I mean the deal mm-hmm. he signed with Netflix, the first deal anyway, it was $10 million more than what he left on the table at Comedy Central.
Well, I think that's a testament to being able to walk away from a thing that's perfect for you. You know what I'm saying? Like he had to be able to say, you know what, I don't want the money and I'm willing to walk away from this deal that everybody, like people like, I don't want to throw Kevin Hart on the bus, but he would jump at that. Kevin Hart would take that in a heartbeat.
Of course.
Like, no lie.
Yeah, you said most people would.
Most people would. Most people absolutely would. But, you know, you have to be saying, you know what, I can't take this deal that is denigrating my people and making me look bad or whatever. Like you have to be able to say that. And I there's a lot of rappers that get into politics that took the money. They took the money.
We'll be here for another hour straight.
I don't want to step on the rail, but the third rail. But I'm just saying, a lot of people took the money and Dave Chappelle said, nah, I'm good. And we need more Dave Chappelle. And less of this other stuff that we got right now.
I totally agree because, like I said, that freedom is real. Because at the end of the day, it's not like you can't hang opportunities or movies or this and that over his head. He has what he wants. No. He wants to be able to do comedy. That's it. He wants to be able to do stand up. And it doesn't matter if he doesn't put out another show on Netflix. The day you know, especially when things open up, the day that he decides to go on tour, we're all going. We're all going. It's just a question of how many of us are going together, and are we sitting together in the same section? But we're all going, you know. Like, and the whole world is like he's gonna pack wherever he goes. So like, money's never gonna be an issue, you know, because he can just go and tell jokes, and because he's the best, right? You know, like he's the best one right now. So like, I just thought like that was like a perfect representation of the power that he has. But all right, guys, let's be out. Thanks for hopping on the podcast, man. Like I said, it's enjoyable. And again, part two, man, we, you know, if you guys are ready to come back for that in a few weeks or whenever this is official, you know, let's do this again.
No, Stan, I know we talked a lot about Biden this time, obviously Biden-Trump.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we can talk about Kamala next time.
Oh, no, we will. We will.
We're going to go in.
Oh, yeah.
I think in the chamber about that lady. Yeah. Man.
That's why I said I'm biting my tongue. I'm bleeding. I'm actually bleeding up my mouth right now.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to the AV Podcast. I appreciate you for taking the time to listen today with an open mind. A special shout out goes out to DJ Keo and Headley for coming on the AV to have this conversation about this U.S. election and also share our feelings on Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And like I said, part two of this episode will be whenever all the votes are counted. The court cases are filed and the title of American president becomes official. So I would say probably within the next 30 days or so. That doesn't mean that the next podcast is going to be out in 30 days from now. The NBA will be out next month. So for you basketball fans, we got some episodes coming, which includes the sped up free agency period and the NBA season previews for each conference. And also, Season 5 of The Stoop will be out next month, and I have a date. First episode will be out on December 10th. More details will be coming out as to where it's going to be showing, but you'll be able to definitely watch it on the South Sharav website. That's southsharav.com once again. And I'll also be doing an upcoming episode on the 25th anniversary of Till Shiloh, Buju's classic album. That's going to be out within the next 10 days, so make sure you stay tuned for that. I can't wait for you to hear and see everything coming out. With that said, make sure you listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows from South Sharav Radio. Make sure you click all the 5 stars when you're tuned in. And to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to southsharav.com once again for emphasis. That's southsharav.com. For DJ Keo and Headley, this is Kyle C. And you just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Sharav Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace. We out.